Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
That means it's another episode of Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know. Brought to you by us. Well, me, KB, your host, and
Miranda Selwood.
With
Julie Eisentrager.
And our super special guest today,
Josh Mulheron.
Josh, it's really nice to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Oh, mate, what show are you talking to us about?
I'm currently doing Jersey Boys.
What?
Yes.
He's doing it. He's like real life in it and stuff.
What? Like actually in it?
Yeah,
we have famous people now.
Currently in Jersey, New Jersey, over in America right now. Yeah.
Look at that.
On the phone, live to you.
Yeah.
Wow. You would never know listening to this that he's joking. So before we jump into Jersey Boys, Josh, we're going to do our really famous Getting to Know You quiz.
Ooh.
Getting to know you.
Yeah. It's pretty exciting. I'd be excited.
Okay.
All right.
He does look excited.
And nervous. Who am I?
You tell us.
That's not one of the questions, so you'll be fine.
Okay.
Fine. Let's start with question number one. Which musical character would other people compare you to?
The one I probably got from the earliest would be Ryan from High School Musical.
Oh, excellent.
Yes.
Wait, which one's Ryan?
I'm Zac Efron. No.
Not Zac Efron's character.
That's awesome. I love Ryan. Ryan's the best character in the whole one. I'm going to move on. Before I offend Zac Efron, which musical character would you like other people to compare you to?
Ooh, to compare me to?
Yeah.
I mean, probably Elphaba. Doesn't everybody want to be compared to? You know.
Just why
she's
not?
She's
you look
fierce.
Good in green.
That's it. Green. Yeah. She wears black all the time. If you're into that,
yeah.
Monochrome, yeah.
Yeah. Great. Yeah.
She can do magic. That's yeah.
She can.
Some pros in there.
Yeah. Great. I'll take it. Elphaba. There we go. You heard it here first, guys. Josh wants to be compared to Elphaba.
And a gender swap as well. Why not? You know,
yeah,
put
yeah.
it in there
do
as well.
It.
Yeah.
So then, what is your dream role?
My dream role would be Frank Abagnale Jr. from Catch Me If You Can.
Good choice.
Yeah.
Good choice.
Well, look, I think they're all great answers. We haven't had Catch Me If You Can in the list of dream roles yet, have we?
Really?
No.
First time.
For me, like every song in that show, at least for Frank, is just, you know, it's a banger after banger.
It's true.
I don't know. There's something really cool about that show where it's, I don't know, kind of set like a TV and it's kind of like he is the, well, I mean, he's obviously the lead, but yeah, he's the kind of a showman that I think every musical theatre guy kind of aspires to be growing up. So yeah, there's something really cool about his character and yeah.
And that he kind of gets to play a lot of characters within the character
too.
Yeah,
it's like
so
an
you've
actor
got a lot
being an
to
actor.
Play with. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
Fun times.
It is a fun time.
I'll see it. I'll book tickets.
Will you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Right. Well, keep us posted, Josh, when that happens. what is your favorite Sondheim show?
Probably Sweeney Todd.
Good one.
I can't help it. I have to do it.
Yeah.
Every time.
Guys, you probably sung along then with Miranda since every time. and at the moment, what is your go-to shower song?
Oh, it's probably going to be Walk Like a Man from Jersey Boys.
Yeah.
Just because if, you know, I'm probably warming up in the shower as well. So it's like, do I have the notes today? Yeah, okay, it's there. Let's go. It's a good day.
Good one. Now we've got into the controversial question.
Ooh.
I know that you've prepared the answer, but you have to delete one musical from existence. Which one is it?
Look, I've been told I can't actually delete this one anymore because it's been done 9 times, but I would delete cats.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So that would be double digits.
It's already gone. Already gone.
Also, I guess in lieu of that one, I would get rid of Starlight Express. I'm sorry, Andrew Lloyd Webber.
I don't think we need sorry, to be sorry to Andrew Lloyd Webber anymore.
which is, you know, I did go and see Cats when it was here a couple of years ago, and it was the new edition of it. And one of my best mates, Daniel Aceta, was playing the Rum Tum Tugger, but he was playing
the
rapping Rum Tum Tugger. So he had the dreadlocks and, you know, the baggy pants, and he came out and he was rapping. It was. Yeah, they did like an updated version to it.
Please.
Julie Eisentrager, how do you feel about dreadlocks and baggy pants on a Rum Tum Tugger?
I feel like the pants just have to be tight. I mean, you can wear tight pants and rum, maybe you can't.
Maybe.
But,
you know, you can.
Between him and Delta Goodrum was obviously in it as well. It was a pretty good show. Like it is a classic. It just doesn't resonate with me.
Yeah,
I suppose,
we all get it. Mm-hmm. It's fine. Mm. And those of us out there that are listening that don't get it, one day you will, and you'll want to delete Cats too.
You'll get a little bit older. Just a little bit older, you'll realize.
I'll apologize to all of my friends that did do Cats. You were all fantastic, but.
Well, I think as a performer is probably the only way you can appreciate that show. If you're in it and you're doing the choreography, then maybe everything else.
Oh, I think it would be more fun to do.
Then
absolutely. They all said to me, they were like, there's nothing as incredible as doing the Jellicle Ball. Like the movements are so classic. It's such a fantastic dancer's piece, and also the music as well is insane. But I guess, I don't know, for me as a performer, an actor sitting in the audience watching, I'm like, I just can't.
I'm not with you.
Something I can't break the wall being like, these people are actors pretending to be cats.
To be cats. Yes.
Which in itself is fantastic. Like, again, you can't highly rate the actors enough, but the show itself is not for me.
Yep. No,
so, we're going to stop Justified
while we're
deleting Cats. We're going to take a little mini break, and then we're going to jump straight into Jersey Boys.
I love a mini break.
So let's talk about my favorite musical ever. I love Jersey Boys. I'm so excited.
Favorite ever?
Yeah.
Didn't know that about you.
Yeah. I just really enjoy it.
This is why we should be best friends.
Yeah.
Okay. Aren't we already?
Do you like Jersey Boys too?
Yeah.
Everyone loves Jersey Boys?
Yeah.
Are we talking about a show that we all actually like? And
guys, this has never happened.
It's rare.
It's very rare.
But it's happening.
Can I just check? Producer Zane. Do you like Jersey?
Yes, he does.
Oh, my goodness.
This is the best.
Wait, why haven't we done this sooner?
I don't know. I feel like this hasn't happened in a long time. We haven't had at least one person at the table who's just gone, meh, about it. So I'm glad that you're here for this.
I also really like Jersey Boys as well.
Yay!
That's really lucky.
Yeah. It's super lucky. Well, why don't we talk about where Jersey Boys has come from, a little bit of history, you know, all the fun facts. Have you got those for us, Joe?
Sure, yes. Let me take a quick look at my notes here.
Yeah.
So where should we should start off, I guess, in the early 2000s. Bob Gaudio, one of the original members of the Four Seasons, they had a discography that was miles and miles long. And he hired the writers Rick Ellis and Marshall Brickman and also the director Dez to kind of create a show similar to the vein of Mamma Mia, which was really successful on Broadway at the time. Because they had this long list of songs. They were like, oh, we could put together a show from the Four Seasons soundtrack to kind of create a story. And I think the original story was kind of going along the lines of this love story of a girl called Sherry and you know, the guy would follow along.
I'm really glad they didn't do that.
So, yeah. But
just the face from Julie Eisentrager right now.
But obviously following from, you know, Mamma Mia of a love story. So the guys kind of sat down and they were trying to, you know, brainstorm of how to put together this show of their music. And the writers went, oh, well, what happened in your life to inspire all these songs? And the guys kind of went, well, oh, here we go. You know, back with Frankie Valli, Tommy DeVito, Nick Massey, Bob Gaudio, when they all came together, there's this crazy story of them meeting and how they had ties to the mafia and the huge debt that the band then got themselves into through the breakup and loss of members to the reforming with new members, rebranding. And the story that they told Marshall and Rick just kind of jumped off the page and they were like, that's the story that we're going to write for this musical. You know, we're going to write a Four Seasons musical about the Four Seasons. And I think it was actually possibly the first musical biopic that followed that kind of format of using the songs to tell a story, which, you know, has now obviously spurred a lot of different musicals in that kind of genre.
We were talking about Beautiful, Carole King recently.
Well, that's it,
and then the multitude that kind of come since then.
Yeah.
So that, I guess, spurred all these jukebox musicals that followed a biopic. They started the show back in 2004 in October with a tryout in San Diego that ran through to January of the next year, which kind of starred a few of the guys that ended up playing in the show. At that point, they didn't yet have John Lloyd Young, who replaced them for the Broadway run when that started. As Frankie Valli. So the musical began previews on Broadway in 2005 in October at the August Wilson Theatre, starring John as Frankie. You had Christian Hoff as Tommy DeVito, Daniel Reichardt as Bob Gaudio, and J. Robert Spencer as Nick Massey. And the Broadway production ran for 4,642 performances.
That's pretty good.
So that only closed recently last year, in fact, on January 15th. 2 years ago. We're in 2019 now.
I know.
So Jersey Boys closed on Broadway in 2017, which I believe makes it one of the longest running musicals. Yeah, about the top 10 or something like that.
It seems like a big number.
It does. So that's kind of where it began. And since then, they've spurred off numerous tours across America. You've got Chicago, Las Vegas. We then crossed over to the West End in 2008. I think they started over there and ran for a similar amount of time. It closed in 2017. And they've just started off another run off Broadway in 2017. We've obviously had a couple of tours here in Australia and, yeah, now we're back up again.
Second time round.
Second
time for Australia. Yeah.
Well, here you go. We've got the one here. The Australian premiere opened at the Princess Theatre in Melbourne in July of 2009, starring Bobby Fox, Stephen May, Scott Johnson and Glaston Toff were the Four Seasons. It's done basically everywhere in Australia, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane. It's even been to New Zealand with our tour.
Woo! Just jumped across.
If you're going to come over here to Australia, you might as well go visit our cousins across the water.
Right. It takes less time to get there than it does to Cairns.
Yeah.
Weirdly true.
That's fine.
Wow. Yeah, so it all depends where you're coming from, Julie. I think that people who live, what's next to Cairns? Never mind. Anyway.
Don't ask me for geography.
Zane just looked it up and it's the 12th longest running show. So almost top 10.
There you go.
But it, as you say, it transferred to off-Broadway. So it's still playing in the region.
Yeah.
It's just moved next door.
Well, that's it. People just can't get enough of the songs and the hits. So
yeah. I think it really proved that model of just take really great music and put a story with some heart in it.
Yeah.
And ta-da, boom, fantastic.
Yeah.
Success.
I think the really cool thing about their story is it's at a little bit of a weird juxtaposition to their music. If you think about Sherry and Walk Like a Man, there's all these really up and poppy songs, but then the story itself is kind of this dark, nitty-gritty. Yeah, they had run-ins with the mafia. There's a lot of extortion, some violence, money, debt, gambling, all this kind of this story that you wouldn't even think kind of happened to essentially a rock band from the 60s, 70s through the 80s. Mm. So I think that's the thing that people really kind of come in and look. They go, oh, wow, I had no idea this was the story and this is all the things that happened to these guys in their life. And as well as the music being fantastic, I think the story is what people kind of latch onto. They come out being like, wow, what a insane ride. And I think that's probably why the writers originally had gone with it. They were like, this is such an interesting story, why would you tell anything else?
I agree. Good point. It's well done, awesome. Everyone. Well done.
Guys, that's great. For those of you who don't know Jersey Boys, One, what are you doing? And two, maybe we should jump into the synopsis and let you know what this show is all about.
Hey, KB.
What happens in this show?
Let's find out. Yay! So apparently it happens over, guess how many seasons, guys?
Four?
I had to check, but yes, you're correct.
And it has a little bit at the end as well.
So and a finale.
And a bit.
Four and a finale. So we start in spring, opening on not where I thought it was going to open when I first saw it. I was like,
chickens?
What's happening? Oh, yeah, chickens.
When I think spring, I think chickens.
Chickens. No, it starts with C'est soir là. And it's like.
Of course it does.
Yeah. A dude comes out rapping a modern version.
Is that how it goes?
No, it's more like C'est soir là.
There you go. Bit better.
On va, on branche.
It's a lot of French. So Frenchy, so chic.
Yeah.
Released in 2000 and is performed, and everyone's like, this is different. Then Tommy DeVito arrives and introduces himself and explains how the song is a cover of the Four Seasons. He offers to tell the story of how the band began, explaining how he started out with a group, the Variety Trio, with his brother Nick DeVito and a friend Nick Massey. So many Nicks, so little
so
time.
So many Nicks.
They're all Nicks and Bobs.
That's the fun part. We have to stay historically accurate to the story, so all the names are... Exactly the same as they are.
Good. It works for me. they eventually discover the teenager Frankie Castelluccio and take him under their wing, teaching him everything he knows, which is delightful and not so delightful. During these years, Nick Massey helped train Frankie to sing, and Tommy went in and out of prison.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Mm. It's just a revolving door, right?
Oh, did you just quote the show? Revolving door.
You know it.
Hey.
How many times I've seen it, guys? I'm ready. I'm ready to jump into
the
role.
How many times is that, KB?
Eight
times.
Let's make it 10.
Let's make it 10. We can totally do
this. You and I will also see it twice.
Yeah.
Frankie changed his last name to Valley with an I. KB, did you get a quote or?
Well, every Italian name ends with a vowel, right, guys?
Do you have any examples of that?
Pizza. That's all I remember.
Pizza. That's actually the last example. Yeah. Yeah.
Frankie. That's it.
Tommy and Frankie developed a good relationship with mob boss Jip DeCaro, which all sounds a bad idea. And Frankie fell in love and married Mary Delgado.
Oh, that's the other one that ends with a vowel.
Delgado.
Now she goes, you're Italian, got to end in a vowel. Delgado, Castelluccio, pizza.
Yeah, see, I knew pizza was in there, guys.
Pizza was in there. The bit that sticks.
The food.
Yeah.
Are we surprised?
Musically, the band was still struggling and kept changing their name and sound, but without any dramatic success. One day, friend and fellow Jersey boy, Joe, how do you say it? I can't say the last name.
Pesci.
Thank you.
You don't know how to say Joe Pesci's name?
Isn't that who you play?
That's who I play in the show. I play little Joey Fishers.
Look at that. I just panicked and went, I didn't even bother to learn this. How you say it?
That's embarrassing.
Joe Pesci.
So Joe Pesci comes up to Tommy.
You know that Joe Pesci's like an actual actor, right?
I'm aware.
Okay, yeah. Just checking. I just needed to know.
But still, didn't
Yeah,
stick.
Cool.
Anyway, so this guy comes up to Tommy and says that he knows a singer-songwriter who'd be perfect for the fourth for their band, Bob Gaudio. Guess what, guys?
What?
Season change. We're in summer.
What? No wow. way. That was so quick.
I know. They do a quick season.
Did
these
Joe
guys.
Do that? Huh? You changed the season.
Maybe secretly.
He has a magic wand.
And Joe Pesci's really a wizard. Oh, this was changing for me.
You heard it here.
Goes
first,
to a train
guys.
Station and walks through a wall.
Well, I did say previously I wanted to be Elphaba. So
okay, when you girls go see this show,
We're gonna be watching.
There's
for
no
Hogwarts.
There's no magic in this. We don't
eyes
fly
on wand.
Away.
Eyes on wand.
Eyes on the wand has several different meanings. Let's move on.
Summer. So what happens in summer, Julie?
Bob Gaudio takes over the narration. Delightful. Telling the audience that no matter what Tommy says, he wasn't plucked from obscurity by him. No. Since he already had a hit single with Short Shorts.
Pardon?
with short shorts.
Short shorts. Got yeah. it. All right.
Bob goes with Joe Pesci to see the band perform and is immediately impressed by Frankie's voice. Bob performs the song he'd just written, Cry For Me, on piano, which Frankie, Nick Massey, and then Tommy joining in with the vocals, bass, and guitar, respectively. I can't read. Anyway, they negotiate an agreement, though Tommy is at first skeptical that Bobby, then still a teenager, will be good for the band. The band eventually gets a contract with producer Bob Crew, but only to sing backup. Crew insists that the band has an identity crisis and needs to make a firm decision on a name and a sound. The band name themselves after the Four Seasons bowling alley, and Bobby writes them three songs that finally propel them to stardom: Sherry, Big Girls Don't Cry, and Walk Like a Man. P.S.
Good song. Mm-hmm.
Side note.
Yes.
Personal side note.
Yes. Personal side note.
Every time I hear the song Walk Like a Man, I think of a movie. And I cannot remember the name of it.
Great side note, Julie.
Someone fill it in for me, though.
Walk the Line.
No. If they die, they die in a bus crash.
Oh.
And this is the song they sing all the time.
Hearts and Souls.
Thank you. Gonna go and Google that and buy it on eBay.
If you haven't seen Hearts and Souls, we've just ruined the ending of it. Oh,
that's wow. the beginning.
That's the beginning. No,
that's
we're fine.
The beginning.
They're all ghosts, aren't they?
Yeah.
No, I've never seen it.
Sorry.
Spoiler alert, the beginning of the
movie. Quick, anyway. Move on.
Jersey Boys. In the wake
Jersey
of their
Boys
success.
So many distractions.
Bob also chalks up a personal first by popping his cherry.
Oh, God.
The band's success means that they tour a lot more along the way, discovering the girl band The Angels. Unfortunately, the constant touring strains Frankie's marriage. Oh, that's what it was. The constant touring.
Constant yeah. touring with
Is that what you've got written down
girl
there?
Band. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I won't tell you what it really was then. Yeah.
And they eventually divorced. You guys can hear the bunny ears. Constant touring.
Frankie
face. The band continues to enjoy chart successes and until after a concert, the band is approached by a loan shark out to claim money owed by Tommy. Honestly, you think he would drop Tommy early on?
But he's the leader, so it's hard.
He brought them all together.
I'd fight him.
He's the
I know you would, Julie. I know you would.
It could have been a very different story. It could have been. You know, the rest of them had just gone, look.
Happily married, boring music at the end.
But to be fair, they also didn't know he was constantly taking out all of this money, apparently. Right?
True story.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had no idea.
They had no idea.
Completely out of the blue.
So.
Yeah.
What you gonna do? What's gonna happen?
Yeah.
A loan shark's gonna break the
probably
door.
Get an accountant. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, we're maybe.
Act a two.
What?
What, guys?
Season three?
Fall.
What?
Fall.
When did
fall?
I thought you said fall. Me too. And I was like, where did the third one go?
Fall.
Autumn.
Autumn.
Yeah.
Autumn.
We're not
Autumn
in America.
For Australian listeners.
Mm-hmm. Nick Massey taking over as narrator explains that Bob
hey,
was
Nick.
Narrator.
Did you hear that? Narrator.
Was so focused on the band's musical success and future that he couldn't see that the band had been in trouble for some time. Tommy had been racking up debts and forgotten bills during a previous tour, and that lands the band in jail over the weekend.
Aw, at least they all get to be together.
Which strains.
I'm sure they took a lot of comfort in that.
Which strains things between Tommy and Bob. Nick observes that Tommy became jealous of Frankie's success and closeness with Bobby and attempted to seduce Frankie's new girlfriend, Lorraine. Lorraine? Yeah, that's how that's spelled. The two never confronted each other about it, but the old friendship was not what it used to be. When the loan shark approaches the band for $150,000 owed by Tommy.
Yeah.
Really should have got an accountant.
That's a lot they had an accountant. Money.
It was Tommy.
I'm also going to point out that that was in 1960, so
that was
it's
a
considerably
lot
a lot of millions today.
Ooh, that's an uncomfortable amount of money.
Frankie goes to Gyp DiCarlo for help, despite Tommy's insistence that he doesn't need it. Whew. The band, Gyp, and the loan shark come to an agreement. Tommy is to be sequestered in Las Vegas, where the mob can keep an eye on him, and the band will willingly cover the debt, along with an additional $500,000 in unpaid taxes.
Ooh.
$500,000?
In the 60s.
Wow. Oh, this shouldn't be news to me. I have seen the show. At this time.
That's also like my favorite scene in the show.
Is it?
Yeah, because I think Nick Massey's like comic timing in that scene accentuates like everything about it. And I just, yeah, I'm hitting the table. Sorry, Zane.
And listeners.
And listeners. I love it so much. And of all the Nick Masseys I've seen, Glastonbury is the best because he just nails it every time with the head on the table. It's just, you have to see the show. Move on.
All right, we'll see it twice. Good. At this time, Nick declares that he's tired of everything and wants out, despite Frankie and Bob trying to convince him to stay. Let's hang on.
Yeah?
To what we've got.
What? No way. Mm.
Guess what, guys?
What?
Winter is coming.
Whoa!
What?
Game of Thrones reference?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then a dragon comes in through the
jungle. Magic.
We're back to the magic.
Oh, Frankie takes over narration, explaining that though he owes Tommy a great deal, he's aware that their relationship wasn't ideal. And he never understood why Nick decided to leave. Frankie and Bob find replacements to keep the band a quartet. Oh, Devo. Until Bobby announces that he's never been comfortable in the spotlight and Frankie should be a single, i.e. Frankie and the Four Seasons. In his personal life, Frankie's relationship with his daughter Francine is strained and he breaks up with girlfriend Lorraine. Frankie continues to have success thanks to Bobby's songs and his jackpot with Come On Marianne. Couldn't read that just then. The word Marianne was not in my vocabulary.
But you said
it. It came out my mouth.
That's so impressive.
It was very scary, guys. I thought I was having a stroke. And the almost never released Can't Take My Eyes Off You, which Bobby fights to get airplay for. Along with the success of Working My Way Back to You, Frankie and Bobby finally finish paying off Tommy's debts. And Frankie's life is good until his daughter Francine dies from a drug overdose. Finale. No more seasons.
A heartbreaking little moment on a bench.
It's awful, but also the first time since Cats I've seen someone die and walk into a light. I was like, classic. Good move. Love it.
Oh, dear.
Bob Crew describes the Four Seasons 1990 induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which reunited the original four members on stage one last time. Each member takes a moment to address the audience in turn, explaining his pride at having been with the band and briefly notes what he did afterwards. Finn.
The end.
Finn!
Yeah, that's it, guys. Yeah. It took us about 20 years to get through that plot, but here we are at the end. Ta-da, we made it.
Yes.
We made it. Later. We mentioned a few songs in there, but we'll go and we'll give you the list of things right after this. Guys, I know that this is going to be a massive surprise to you all, but all the songs in this show were Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons songs.
All of
what? Like if you listened to this show and were like, I've heard these songs before. No, I lie to you. There are a few that are different. So let's go from the top. Obviously, we start with C'est Soir-là, the French rappy opening of the show. Can you do that one more time for us, George?
I don't know. I don't sing the French one, but it starts off with like, Que tu se sens de l'aide de vibe.
Yeah.
Que tu se sens de l'aide de vibe. Yeah, basically.
That's French TV.
Oh, at least it wasn't baguette.
It should have been. Because that would be funny.
So then we go under the street lamp. Is that where we head to after that, Josh?
Yes.
And we start singing Silhouettes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yep.
And You're the Apple of My Eye is kind of a transitional song.
It transitions into a nightclub one of the boys are playing at.
Guys. And then we have Frankie Valli singing, I can't give you anything but love.
That's not how that song goes.
That was basically the melody line. That's that was it. Yeah.
That's
Baby.
The rhythm of
Was that like an alto version?
Yeah. It's the part
and
that
the alto
nobody
version goes,
like.
I can't give you anything but love, baby. Now the alto version.
And then Earth Angel. Earth Angel.
Made famous by the Back to the Future soundtrack. in my mind. Yes, that's where that song comes from.
That's where that song originated.
It didn't exist before Back to
the
Future.
No,
I'm going to have to go back and rewatch those movies now that I know that song's in it. Yeah.
And
it
then
was written by Michael J. Fox. Stop, Miranda, stop.
And then we go into A Sunday Kind of Love, which is the song that Nick Massey uses to teach Frankie Valli.
Yeah, so they break into a church at that point and use the organ to.
I mean, is it really that's breaking cute. In? They usually open
churches.
Yeah.
Well,
I also like how the list of people that are in this particular number is Frankie Valli, Tommy DeVito, Nick Massey, and Nick State.
The girl doesn't get a name.
She probably is a lot of other things in this show. Yes.
But it's got a cool sound to it with the organ and the female voice in there.
Just the one.
They also throw on a huge amount of reverb to create the church kind of echo as well.
Mm. It's really cool. My mother's
like inside knowledge. Are you allowed to?
Yeah, you would never have guessed that seeing the show.
I was going to say, while we're going through all of these early ones, because obviously none of these starting ones are actual four-season songs, but the interesting thing is all of these songs were either written by Bob Gaudio or Bob Crewe, who was the producer for the four seasons that did all of their songs. So the ones coming up in about two songs, I'll jump back in for that one as well, which has got a funny story.
It has a funny – guys, we love funny stories. Yes. So we're just going to, like, run through these next ones really fast. So you've got My Mother's Eyes, which Frankie Valli sings because Mob Boss wants him to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I Go Ape is, like, they're trying out their new sound and their new name and seeing if they can be a comedy act.
And this is where I'll stop you because I Go Ape is probably one of the funniest songs in the show. Not for any particular reason. There's nothing necessarily funny about the lyrics. We do have, you know, if you've seen the show, I won't give too much away, but ape is very, you know, relative to it. But when Bob Crewe saw the original musical and heard that song, he'd released this song about four times throughout his career as a producer, thinking this
really
song,
trying to make it work.
This song is a hit. I know it's going to be number one. So in 2005, when he saw the show, I think at that point he's in his 80s or something like that, he's watched the whole show and he comes back at the end and goes, oh, I Go Ape, we should release that song again. That's a great song.
No!
And just for some reason thought that this I Go Ape song, which is really not a particularly great song, was just going to be a number one hit. Just so fixated on that.
He saw it. Its time is coming.
Is it now that I tell him that I don't remember that song in the show at all?
Oh, wow, Julie. I don't either.
It's in the, like, the bit where everyone leaves.
No. Okay, we'll refresh. I'm just going to hop on the website for just possible tickets.
I'll try and do the Tommy monologue before it, where he comes down. So they've just found this new guy, Hank Majewski, who writes these songs, the comedy songs. They're touring in all these weird Western American country outback towns, and they're sitting down at this one place where he goes, you know, we're playing to this town and the population's 12 and we're playing to three Mexicans and a guy with no nose. And throughout the 16 bars of the song that we actually do, the four of us on stage get up and leave.
Aww.
And by the end of the song, there's no one sitting there watching because it's that bad of a song.
When we're sitting in the audience, Julie, I'll be like, it's coming. This is the song. Okay?
Just a gentle nudge in the ribs.
And then we get a little taste test of Bob Gaudio's number one hit, Who Wears Short Shorts.
Who does wear short shorts?
Lots of people these
Football
days.
Players, I think.
Mostly.
Yeah. You just have to walk around a shopping centre, Julie, and you'll be able to answer that question for yourself. And then we jump into I'm in the Mood for Love.
KB, not now. Inappropriate.
One day you'll say yes.
Moody's Mood for Love.
Moody's Mood for Love, which is where Bob hears Frankie's voice for the first time.
Yeah, it's the first time he hears it, yeah.
And he's like, I've got a right for that voice. And magic happens. Yeah, I did.
Magic happens?
Yeah, magic happens. There's magic.
This show is actually the prequel to Harry Potter, guys.
Oh, man. I didn't know Frankie Valli was Dumbledore. That changes everything.
That's the tiniest Dumbledore ever.
And then I don't know why these are. There's some that aren't highlighted on the internet.
Those are hyperlinks to the actual songs. So some of these songs are not obscure enough, but they're very independently released. Or so the next ones that after Cry For Me, which is a song that was never released by the band. I think it's possibly on a B-side, but because when the writers were creating the song, being like, oh, we need something here that introduces Bob Gaudio and then gets the guys to join, and they were just sitting there and they had a list of about 187 songs of the Four Seasons discography, and they went, oh, okay, Cry Something, Cry For Me. And they went and found this one song. They went, yep, that's the one, put it in there.
It's so good.
So the Cry For Me, the song where you first hear the Four Seasons sound, was never actually a song that they released mainstream, but it's kind of the essence of what their first sound was. Yeah. And it introduces the audience. This is the first time they actually hear all four guys sing together as the Seasons.
And it's awesome.
A really interesting choice to choose something that a lot of the audience wouldn't be super familiar with, because it says, even to the audience, this is something different and new and special.
Yeah.
It is super special. It gives me goosebumps. And then we go into like a series of songs by a series of singers, because the boys went and did backup vocals in Bob Crew's studio. So we get An Angel Cried, I Still Care, and Trance, but you only really have like a line or two of each of those.
A blip.
Yeah, a little snippet.
We call it the smedley for the the studio medley. So you know, we abbreviate that down. Fun fact for that, An Angel Cried has recently been covered by Ariana Grande. It's the it's the starting track on a new album.
Does it sound like the original at all?
It pretty much, yeah. I think she changes it up a few keys, but it's almost melodically exactly the same what we do in the show.
That's awesome. And then we jump in to the hits. Guys, these are the ones everyone's been waiting for.
Bangers.
So we go, Sherry, Big Girls Don't Cry, Walk Like a Man, December 1963, which is I Want a Night. Yeah, so we got the new sound, we've got the hits, they're on the track to stardom. We then meet the angels that they go on tour with My Boyfriend's Back. I feel like I heard that song in a recent song on the radio, and I was like, that's My Boyfriend's Back. You can't use that. Anyway, I'll figure out what that is. I'll find it.
Doberman.
Yeah, I will. I'm sure there's some lore about they can use it. Anyway, next one, My Eyes Adored You, is when the whole breakup starts happening and life starts falling apart a little bit for Frankie. It's very sad. And then Dawn comes in. Really close to the end. Is that a season change? When does Dawn?
No, Dawn. Sung? Dawn's kind of like the finale of Act One. There's like a tiny little reprise of Walk Like a Man that kind of finishes. But yeah, that's their. That's I guess a kind of point in their history where the Beatles were coming in and taking over. So a lot of the UK artists. And there's a really interesting statistic if you look at all the American bands that existed before the British invasion, and then the ones that exist afterwards. The only bands that survive are literally the Four Seasons and the Beach Boys, and anybody before the Beatles no longer releases hits.
Whoa!
And it's just the Four Seasons and the Beach Boys
that
survive.
That's crazy.
I mean, who's even heard of the Beatles?
Yeah, man, who are those guys?
Completely unrelated.
Do they have a musical?
No,
it's not as good as ours.
It's really not.
It's not. So then we jump into – that's a lot of songs for Act 1 in comparison to what's in Act 2.
Jukebox shows always have a lot of songs in them.
Yeah.
They're mostly condensed versions of pop songs. So then they're not written in the same way that – musical theatre songs are written with, you know, an introduction and then a few verses and then a, you know, big development and then a, you know. So they're compacted comparatively.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more of them to fill out the music. But they also tend to have less complicated books.
Yeah.
Compared to modern musical theatre.
Maybe that's why I like jukebox musicals.
Because they just keep singing. They get
Not because they just keep singing. That's the reason I don't like musicals. Is because they keep changing the song.
Right.
Maybe. And my adult ADHD
it's like
can deal with that.
The skip button on an iTunes.
Yeah. It's like, I've had enough of that song.
I knew one. Yay. To be fair, these rotate very quickly in terms of like, it's like a little bit of dialogue, a bit of song, a little bit of dialogue, a bit of song. And it's cool staging because they're on live television for a bit and like that kind of stuff.
You
it's very move
a lot of the musicians too.
Yeah.
The
drama comes out.
Yeah, so I will go down to this later, I'm sure, but the drum kit actually sits on stage the entire time and is on a revolving kind of moving thing that comes forward.
Own
so
truck.
It's on its own truck and it comes forward and it changes to the position of where the club or wherever they're playing. And we also bring on the guitarist and the bassist. We've got a pianist that comes on at one point. And all the boys have guitars as well. So it's literally a rock band on stage in almost every scene.
Fun. It's so fun. Anyway, let's get into Act 2. We'll talk about production in a second. Let's get through Act 2 and then we'll get there. All right. So Act 2 opens with Big Man in Town. And then we go into Beggin', which is one of my favourite songs of the whole show.
Oh, look at you.
I just love it so much.
She's filled with glee, guys. You can see it.
Glee.
Is that because Frankie does this really great opening dance move? Yes. Where he goes into this, yeah, you like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's no. Really cool. Yeah, I do. I really do like it. I just love the era, guys. That's what it comes down to. When music was like music.
You know what? Back in my day. Back which in wasn't my day. Because my day was the 90s.
My day was the 80s. Just.
Oh, okay.
When you were born. Maybe.
When I was born. No, but you know when you feel like you've been born in the wrong era?
Yeah.
Nah, this is the era.
I should have been born in 1911.
1911. Me too, because like, then by the time it got to 1940.
70 years too late.
70 years too late.
I'll point out that I was born in 94 and I'm currently doing a show that's set in the 60s. So if anybody's a little out of their time, it's probably me.
Yeah, it's true. Oh, no, I've lost it. It's gone. Two show songs. We then go into Stay and Let's Hang On. I kind of like melded into one moment. Then
a mini medley.
Bye Bye Baby. Come On, Marianne. Can't Take My Eyes Off You. We've talked through all these through the plot, so you know where they sit. Working My Way Back to You is like they're literally working real hard to get that debt paid off. Fallen Angel is when...
So the group was literally sort of trapped doing Vegas shows.
Yeah.
For years.
Oh, not really.
Yeah, the constant touring that broke down his marriage.
Ragdoll, Who Loves You, and
Who Loves You is my favorite.
Who Loves You is your favorite?
Yeah.
It's a good one. It is a good one.
If I feel like if I were to jog...
if at any point, song. At some point, I will jog, it'll be to that song.
Yeah.
And then we finish with a reprise of Oh, What a Night. So it's fun. The music's fun.
Bangers.
Just like good song after good. I can't talk the show up anymore. You're going to stop believing me.
We can give you a little more airtime.
One day. We can't have like a 2.5 hour podcast though, can we?
Sure we can.
We
got pretty close to the Les Mis. Is that the longest episode we've done?
Les Mis versus Gypsy. One of them was pretty long.
Well, let's not make this one any longer than it needs to be, even though it should be really, really long because this is a great show. Let's talk about cast and production elements.
Okay.
All right, so there have been a lot of people that have been in this show.
Well, there have been a lot of productions of this show.
Yes.
That doesn't mean I know who's been in it.
Well, let's give it a crack, shall we?
I'm going to give it a crack. Let's talk original Broadway cast. So back in 2005, John Lloyd Young starred as Frankie Valli. We talked about him a little bit before. He also transferred that role to the film. So if you're watching the movie, for those of you who like the movie, 2014. So it was a big gap between his Broadway stint and the movie, in theory, except that Broadway show ran for a long time.
Yeah, well, so I don't know how long he was on Broadway across. For.
Tommy DeVito, Christian Hoff, Bob Gordio, Daniel Reichard. I just really need to be really careful with the names. Nick Massey, J. Robert Spencer. I feel like we've talked about J. Robert Spencer in a previous episode because I remember making a thing about
Next to Normal.
Just J being his first name.
We haven't done
Next to Normal. Must have been another stuff that we've talked about. Yeah. But, yeah, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
We haven't done sideshows.
Mary Delgado was played by Jennifer Nino. There's an A and an I in there. Bob Crewe by Peter Grigas. Jip DiCarlo, Mark Lotito, Joe Pesci was played by Joe Pesci. No, that would have been cool though.
That would have been so cool.
Like if he could just play himself. be interesting.
But the younger version of
Michael
himself.
Longoria actually had the pleasure. And a few other people have been in it. Erica Piccinini played Lorraine. And she also, also transferred to the film, as did Demi Kerr in the Donnie Kerr, sorry, in the role of Norm. sorry about that. Frankie's daughter is played by Sarah Schmidt in the original. They did a bit of a different thing in the film because they cast younger versions of her as well and sort of added her into the story in a little bit more. So there were a few more kiddly winks in that one. US tour, the first US tour, Christopher Cale Jones in the role of Frankie Valli, Devon May, Eric Bergen, and Michael Ingersoll rounded out the four seasons. And there's not too much other exciting stuff. West End, Ryan Malloy played Frankie Valli. Glenn Carter, Stephen Ashfield, and Philip Balcock were the other three seasons. And there's an international tour cast listed on the site too. Not too many familiar names in there for me personally. The other fun point is Christopher Walken, we mentioned earlier, played Jip DiCarlo in the film.
So scary.
Yeah.
So
and
good.
We have had two Australian casts.
We have. And they're not on Wikipedia.
They're not on Wikipedia. So somebody needs to fix that.
What are you doing? Josh, who's in the current cast?
This will be a test of your mettle.
A really
well, actually,
awkward
reading,
test.
Reading interestingly enough, I'll start off with the Frankies because the way that they work Frankie Valli is a person playing Frankie will never do two in a day because the show is so massively vocally demanding for that performer that if you've got a matinee and an evening show, you'll break it up between two performers. So there's an alternate Frankie Valli as well, which is interesting that the
they don't
the breakdown
the
doesn't give
that's
that.
It's a bit offensive.
Yeah.
So at the moment, our Frankie Valli is the wonderful Ryan Gonzalez. He's very talented. Mm-hmm. Our alternate Frankie Valli is Daniel Razzo.
Cool.
Our Tommy DeVito is Cameron McDonald. Bob Gordio is played by Thomas McGuan. Nick Massey is Glaston Toff.
Oh, the
and
greatest
he did,
Nick
he did
Massey.
The first Australian tour.
He
as
did
well.
The first Australian tour.
So is he the only one of the lead Four Seasons cast that
to
have done
back?
Both?
No, Cameron McDonald did the last tour. He understudied Tommy DeVito at that point, so this time he's now stepped up into the role.
Good job.
I believe...
Just pointing out, my personal history with Cameron, no, I do not know him from a bar of soap, but the first thing I saw him in was Altar Boys, so I have a lot of trouble visualising him as anything else. See, that show is a bit special, but each of those characters are really strong sort of character types.
Yeah.
So... I just find it really difficult.
Would you like to come and see it with KB?
Yeah,
they are both boy bands, so maybe
it's true.
There's a theme.
Maybe it will be all right.
Maybe is that all he does? He must die.
He was also actually recently in Beautiful as well. Not a boy band, but biopic.
Carole King, the new boy band.
Yes,
starring Cameron.
Our Nick Massey, before mentioned, Glaston Toff, and I think statistically he. Is the Nick Massey who has done the most performances in the world?
Because
I
he's
want
the
to say
best
that.
In the world.
He's done something like 1,250 performances as Nick Massey.
Wow. He's so good at it, guys. Buy a ticket to see Glaston Top. The only Nick Massey that has come even close was Lewis Griffiths, who is in the UK tour at the moment. And I saw him in Newcastle. And I was like... Like, I'm always gunning for Massey because Massey's my favourite, but Glaston is the best. You can tell him that.
I'll let him know.
Please, tell him
I will,
that.
I'll tell him.
Surely he's listening to the whole episode.
Right?
Continuing down the line, Mary Delgado is played by Christina D'Agostino. Bob Crewe is Glenn Hill. Jip DiCarlo is Enrico Mamalella. I think I said his name wrong. I'm so sorry,
this
Ricky.
Delightful.
Joe Pesci is played by me,
what?
Josh Mulheron.
No way.
Well, we should probably definitely go see it then.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you just repeat that name one more time?
Joe Pesci?
Yeah. Or, no. The actor's name?
Josh Mulheron.
Okay, there we go. That's you, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I think we got a couple.
Continuing down from that, Norm Waxman is played by Luigi Lucente.
Luigi. I love that name. You have a great name, Luigi. Lorraine?
Lorraine is played by, I'm going to stuff up her last name. I'm so sorry. Mia DC. Her last name is Dear Chandler. It's hyphenated.
Do you want me to try it?
It's, yeah, no. Francine is played by Mackenzie Dunn. I feel like that's a really small list. Yeah, it is. We're missing Hank Majewski off here. One of the tricky things with the show is everybody plays multiple players. So, like, I'll play Joe Pesci for like 30 minutes in the show, but then I'll play so many other different characters. So, Hank Majewski is played by Scott McConnell. Barry Belson, who is the radio host, is played by Ruthenie Spooner. And he's a Kiwi, actually. Fun fact.
Cool.
So the entire... here's a controversial topic. with Australian musical theatre, our entire cast is Australian except for Ruthenie, who's Kiwi. So that's an honorary Australian, I believe.
It's okay.
We adopt all the best New Zealanders.
Yes.
As our own.
Sam Neill.
That's the list so far. Look, I don't mind a few visitors coming over and having some fun in Australian musical theatre. We do the same thing. It's fine.
We do.
It's fine.
And then continuing on there, we also have four fantastic swings. We have Sage Douglas, Joseph Name, Jack O'Reilly, and Matthew Prime, who cover all of those roles. There's only, you know, Sage covers all three girls. Joseph covers about five roles. Jack's got seven. Matt Prime covers another five or six. And the way that they break down the understudying is each season is covered by two people in the cast. So I myself understudy Frankie Valli. If I get the chance to go on for that one, dream role.
How many times? Well, you haven't gone on yet?
I haven't yet. No.
What do we need to do to make that happen?
I guess because there's already an alternate.
Yeah, like, so the tricky way that
like
breaks
being
down,
a
yes,
second understudy?
Is a little bit like the second cover, yeah. Yeah. I've more chance of going on a two-show day. Than another day. But no, kudos to the two boys, Daniel and Ryan. They've got voices of steel. They're just phenomenal that they can continually, day after day, sing such an insane vocal score.
And so much of it, too.
If you go and see the show, Frankie is literally on stage almost the entire time. Mm. There's maybe a section, Act One, where he doesn't do two of the songs on there, and then Act Two, he goes off to do one costume change and then is on for the entire of Act Two.
It's very impressive.
Never leaves the stage. He has to have like little drink breaks choreographed into the show where they've got like cups of water in the scene where, you know, he'll drink from a coffee cup with water so that he can get through.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
It's the Alliance of Doolittle of the modern
it's
stage
true.
Era.
We don't often talk about production elements in a lot of our podcasts, but I like that this staging is so simple for the, I guess, brevity of the storyline. Like, you're going across a lot of years, you've seen a lot of stuff, and at the end of the day, it's a scaffolding set.
They haven't tried to create a box set for everything and make everything look real.
No.
Because that would have been... insane. And you would have spent 90% of the show with scene change underscoring.
Yeah, or blackouts or whatever. Everything. I think that the way that they've done it is really interesting. I think the direction of the show is what brings so much of it to the forefront for me as an excellent musical. And it's that idea of like little things, like everyone who leaves Frankie Valli's life goes through that top door.
Yeah,
and
leaves up on top and goes off.
Comes back through that same door. It's like such a simple direction, but I think is really effective. And I really enjoy that it's a whole, everything's been thought of. It isn't just the choreography that pops or the music that pops. It's every little bit working in harmony and like a drum kit spiraling around the stage on its own truck. Like, come on, guys.
I do appreciate a show that includes the music in the staging.
Yeah.
And I did really enjoy that, and seeing this show that intrinsically a part of their story is their music. So it would have been a very different show if they'd just put an orchestra in the pit and done a bit of miming on guitars.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have seen the music you know, in front of you, it would have been completely different and yeah. probably quite dull.
Yeah.
So thank you for putting the band on stage. Yeah. Miranda loves a band on stage, doesn't she? Yes, she does.
Yeah, okay, she does.
Answering my own question.
Yeah, no, it's
anywho.
Great. Anyway, that anyone else need
I mean, I could talk about several different of the yeah. production elements. There's some really cool things that you wouldn't necessarily notice in the show unless you'd kind of someone kind of told you. So I'll give a couple of little things
inside
here and
information.
There.
Oh.
Bum, 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 bum. I feel like we need to all, you know, kind of silence.
Listeners, if you tell anyone, we'll know it was you.
Someone put a timer on so I don't go over 10 minutes because we could be here a while. But no, one of the things that kind of separates our current tour from the previous one of Australia is we're doing more of a, not necessarily condensed, but an easier to tour version of the show. Whereas previously they had a lift in the stage and the original Broadway run had this as well. I don't think the Off-Broadway one does. But they had a lift in the stage where the microphones would come up and down from. And at the end for Ragdoll, where the boys come out and they do their final performance at the Hall of Fame, they kind of come up from the stage and, you know, appear. For us, because we've obviously done Sydney, we're in Brisbane, we're in Melbourne next, and we've gone around quite quickly in each city, we've got tracks on the stage that bring the microphones on and off, and a couple of the things like the church seat comes on. A lot of the props are either moved on by cast members or... Actually, no, the cast members do move on a lot of the props as well.
And, like, real
so
quick. Real you guys quick, have got that
they
down
were,
to a
They
T.
were very on about the transitions because, like you said, there's basically so nothing on the stage. Yeah. There's a scaffolding and that's it. So all the transitions on have to look so smooth, or otherwise you'll notice that they're happening. Then you go, oh, everybody's bringing on a chair and a table.
Yeah.
So one of the things they kind of pride themselves on this show is how detail orientated it is. And in breaking the show down into the four seasons, each season has a different color scheme. But not only for the costumes, but also the props on stage. So you'll notice, well, you probably won't notice unless you're sitting in the front row, but in the summer and spring seasons, any cup that has a straw in it, the straw is red. But then in Act Two, when it's in fall and winter, they're then black.
Whoa,
same thing with the phones. The phones start off being yellow phones in Act One in the summer season, and then in winter, they're white. So all these kind of very subtle things happen on stage to kind of go from being this bright, happy story bursting to when everything starts to break down, almost all the color kind of comes out of the story as well. So there's all these little details like that. And you said the when people die or leave the seasons or Frankie's life, they kind of leave up by the OP parapet and they walk off into not death or, you know, the light or things like that. But yeah, when Francine passes away or Nick Massey passes away, they kind of walk off that way. Mary Delgado, when she divorces him, leaves that way as well. Lorraine, when she leaves Frankie's life. So they've got all of these continuity kind of things that come back around and link the show together in costuming and staging that it's very detail-oriented, and I think it's such an incredible little thing that maybe not necessarily an audience member would notice, but the actors particularly go, okay, well, we're going through 30 years of a time frame. What kind of separates the spring season from the winter season? It's all these little costume changes or the scenery or the props that kind of, I don't know, make it a real story. And it's not a big production number value. There isn't all these bells and whistles going, oh, we'll distract you from maybe something that's not really great. Because it's so minimalistic, it's really dependent on the actors and the sound and everybody's performances to really tell this story.
Yeah.
The storytelling is clearly the center of the show.
And the story itself.
And I think that's what makes it work better than some other jukebox shows.
Yeah.
Like The Boy from Oz has got a lot of problems. It's essentially the same format, right? But completely different in its presentation and delivery.
Yeah.
Completely different.
I don't think it's tried to turn itself into musical theatre. I think it's been like, this is our sound and we'll tweak it a bit to like get the continuity, I guess, in there. But I don't know. I think it doesn't come across as that show, they're not show tunes and they haven't tried to turn them into show tunes.
What they kind of said to us in I guess the dramaturgy and breaking down the script and everything like that, the show itself is essentially a play with music dispersed throughout it. You know, we're not telling a story through song like some musical, well, most musicals kind of progress their story when the emotion gets too much, they then have to sing.
Yep.
Ours is, because it's a rock band, a lot of our songs are performances that don't drive the play or the script. They just exist there being like at this point in
our... They definitely comment on it.
Yeah.
Oh. Like they've been placed with purpose.
Yeah. Yes.
And they are a reflection of what's happening, yeah. Which is similar to how the songs are used in Beautiful. We were talking about that a few weeks ago.
The interesting thing for us that kind of separates Jersey from Beautiful is Beautiful follows exactly chronologically where her songs fall, except for, I think, the opening and the closing. So they'll do all of their recording sessions as it happened. For Jersey Boys, because we span over 30 years, we do get up to, after the big three, Sherry, Walk Like a Man, Big Girls Don't Cry. From there on out, the songs become less chronological and then they start commenting on what's happening at that point until we jump back into winter when it becomes Frankie Valli doing, you know, Come On Marianne, Working My Way, Can't Take. Those are all back into chronological. But things like Dawn and Stay, Big Man in Town, all those songs happened at different times, but they're placed in such a way to drive the story in the song, while not necessarily commenting on them, are in a place that does build the tension and pushes it towards the I guess, removal of Tommy from the band as being the big climactic point in Act 2.
It's very clever. It's had a lot of thought put into it. The storytelling is at the forefront, and that's my favorite thing. So let's talk about Dreamcast.
Oh.
So, guys, who do we want to put in this show?
Dreamcast.
It's our Dreamcast.
It's a hard one.
It's a hard one.
Oh, I really just realized this is a hard one because it's the first time I thought about it.
Oh my goodness. This is some great listening. All right. Well, it's a big cast in terms of like casting the show. So obviously the casting directors have done an amazing job on any production since we're like, we don't know. I'm just going to say, not that I haven't said it enough already, I'd keep Glaston in there as Nick Massey in any of my dream casts. He's the bomb. Go see the show.
Literally the bomb.
Literally the bomb with a D-A.
Is Zach going to pull off Frankie Valli?
No.
Well, here's the... I mean, dream cast for this show is kind of interesting because each of these roles have to be so specific. Like Frankie's got to be underneath a certain height. Bob and Nick have to be above a certain height. So if you want to keep it in the realms of real casting as opposed to fake casting, but I'll throw my hat in the ring and say maybe Zac Efron for Bob Gordio.
Yes!
Bob Gordio.
Didn't even tell him to do that, guys.
He's on the team. He's not wearing a weird cast Zac Efron t-shirt, which you can buy for yourself.
I am.
But
well, no,
still
I,
cast Zac Efron.
I recently watched The Greatest Showman.
Yes.
I'll be honest, I didn't see it when it came out. It was only 2 weeks ago that I saw it, so
it's
very
okay.
Recently.
Bad musical
That's fine.
Theater fan. Bad fan.
I still haven't seen it.
And he played a showman quite well.
Yeah, he did.
And while Gordio's a little bit of the awkward, shy one, there is kind of a youthful nature about him. One of the people that actually played Bob Gordio that most people may or may not know was Andrew Rannells.
That's
actually
awesome.
Had a stint on Broadway before obviously going into the Book of Mormon where he played Bob Gordio. So you could, any kind of young, semi-tall person for that. So, you know, I reckon Zac Efron could go in there.
Good old Zac in the cast. I also might contest Zac for the first time ever. With saying so happy, but I don't think you're going to like the alternative, Zay.
Ooh. Is it Audra McDonald?
How did you know?
As Joe Pesci.
No, I'm gonna throw Taron Egerton into the ring for this one because he's been singing a lot in a lot of movies.
Oh,
he's about to play Elton John in the Elton John biopic, movie Rocketman. He did sing. He was the gorilla in the animated movie Sing. He can play piano.
Oh, okay.
I think he'd be a good time. Have you seen the guy that's in Kingsman? If you've seen Kingsman. No, he's the guy in Eddie the Eagle. Have you seen Eddie? He's
the new Robin Hood movie.
He's in the new. Oh my goodness, Julie, you're impossible.
Julie.
Cool. Yeah. But look, Zach would also do a great job, and I'm always happy for Zach to be in the show. Hey, Zane, it's a good time. With Zac Efron in there.
Zane's nodding and smiling and gesturing emphatically that that is a good time.
Emphatically.
Cool.
This is too hard.
So we have two people cast.
This is really hard.
Frankie Belli, I think, is a difficult one to throw actors.
I've got a joke answer.
What's the joke? Julie?
Julie?
No. Tom Cruise?
Anthony Kalia?
Anthony Kalia!
He might be great!
He might be talking there.
He's a good height.
He can.
He's a great height, and that's the only reason I thought of him.
His last name ends in a vowel, so maybe
he's in.
He's in.
What's his last name?
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I like Anthony Kalia.
Yeah. Look.
Oh man.
I think this is a really difficult show to cast.
Casting types are so specific.
Because yes, the casting types are so specific, and like most of them have to kind of look like they're Italian, right? Like be able to pass at least for Jersey-ish.
Boys.
Like. Yeah, I don't know. It's a difficult one.
I mean, I'm too close to the, you know, I see the Four Seasons every night, so it's very difficult to imagine anybody other than our guys kind of doing
and
it.
And to be fair, like,
the
when you, like...
The original Four Seasons?
Yeah, the original.
Can we get them back together?
Even now when I listen to, like, the original Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, they're people I'm picturing is, like, Stephen Mai and Bobby Fox and the first people I saw in the show, because that's the... It's kind of like when you read a book and you've seen the movie, that's the character you have.
I've Googled tall singers to try and fill the other two roles.
That's going
to
be a great Google. That's going to bring up helpful stuff.
I've got Wiz Khalifa.
No.
And John Mayer. John Mayer?
Please. Actually, I'll put John Mayer down for Tommy DeVito.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, there we go. Done. John Mayer.
He's a little bit... I don't know, grit. Like, I don't want to say he's a bit of an asshole, but can we put that one in there? Is that a bad word? Okay, so he's a bit of an a-hole. Goes, you know what? I'm good at what I do. You should respect me for my art, which is pretty much Tommy DeVito. He goes, you know, this is who I am. I'm not going to make any excuses for it. You'll either like me or you won't.
And he looks so slightly Italian.
He does. He's got that look.
John Mayer. I've cast somebody in this show.
Well done.
I'm so proud of you.
Guys. For Chip DiCarlo, I really want to see Mandy Patinkin play the role.
Yes!
Yeah, all right.
Or could we use real Joe Pesci in that role?
Maybe we could.
Would he do it? Would he be too angry?
I don't know. Maybe we'll ask him. Joe, okay. If you're listening.
Dear Joe.
Just call us on that invisible number that we seem to have and let us know if you want to play Chip DiCarlo at any point. We'll make it happen as best we can.
And the Jersey Boys that we're putting on with John Mayer.
John Mayer and Zac Efron.
And Anthony Kalia. Don't forget Anthony Kalia.
Anyway, let's move on since we really don't have...
That's all the big ones.
Well, it's the dream cast.
It's the dream cast for now. If we have any changes, we'll just post them into the show notes because I think we might have to. Anyway, let's move on to that top five list.
Woo!
Top five list. Have we done better than our dream cast? That is the question. Where does this fall?
I would put it on top five jukebox.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just because I think that it set up a form that worked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, great.
Are we also putting like jukebox / biopic? Or is biopic a different top
list? I think it'd
list?
Be a different,
two different list.
Two different lists.
Put it on both.
Yeah, okay.
All the lists in the land.
It's on my personal top five.
It's on my personal top five.
This is why we're best friends.
It's true now, finally. She loves me.
Is that also on the list?
It is actually also on my list.
Cool.
Top five twirling drum kits.
Yep. Great.
Or
top five bands on stage.
Bands on stage. because of the interesting way they use the instrumentalists on stage.
Sure.
I'm going to say that.
I would go top.
Is this going to be controversial, Josh?
No, it's I'm just trying to find the way to phrase it. It would top the list for most difficult vocal male part in a musical.
Great one.
A hefty male sing.
but not necessarily for range. Like if you're singing The Phantom or something that's down so low, but to create every night consistently the Frankie Valli falsetto isn't necessarily something that you can over time develop. You almost have to be born with the right mechanism and vocal folds to be able to produce that sound.
And to produce it consistently. Not quite 8 shows a week.
One of the crazy things I think is that this show just goes back to back to back to back, which I would assume that Frankie Valli would do in his current shows while he tours, is just sing all these songs in a row. And you have to find someone that can not only just sing the song once, but to sing an entire discography across a 2.5 hour show, 6 times a week.
It's a lot. Yeah, definitely, definitely on that top 5.
And be below 5'8".
There's also that.
Below 5'8". That sounds short leads.
Top
5 short leads.
It's also a lot broader description than I thought it would be. Under 5'8", that's
Bok.
But yeah. 5'8" is still quite the munchkin tall, cast. Though.
Yeah, I'm on the taller end of the Frankie spectrum. Because we've got, I think Raz is 5'4", Daniel Razzo's 5'4".
I'd say Daniel Radcliffe is 5'4".
Daniel Radcliffe.
Is he?
Actually,
he's
5'5". He could probably play Frankie Valli, Daniel Radcliffe.
Or Joe Pesci.
Or Pesci.
I think you're going to say Joe Pesci.
Daniel Radcliffe could play Joe Pesci.
Yes, I'm with you.
So Daniel Razzo's 5'4", Ryan I think is 5'6", and then I come in at about 5'7.5".
Wow.
5'8", if I'm wearing risers in my shoes.
I was expecting probably more along the 5'5".
Me too. 5'5" and under.
5'8's quite tall.
Yeah,
what I was expecting.
Because it kind of relatively falls in with the rest of the cast as well.
Yeah.
So Glaston's like 6'4", 6'5". He's really tall. Tom comes in at about 6'2" for Gaudio height.
That makes it easy to look short then, doesn't it?
And then Cameron's at about 6 foot as well.
Wow.
So even for me, like, I'm shorter than the other three, so then it works out height-wise.
Yes.
So we'll put it onto the list of most specific casting heights as well.
I think we might be surprised how often that is a thing. But yeah, for it to have that exact sort of relationship.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's any rules that Elphaba has to be taller than Glinda. Well, everyone I've seen has been.
Women, it's easier to fix it with shoes. Yeah. Like, seriously, though, it is.
It's true. You get a 5 foot Elphaba and you're
hat.
Like, ooh,
better put some
big
really
shoes
big,
on her.
We'll just large get her hair. Those boots, the really big boots.
Oh, boots.
With a T, Julie. Boots.
So specific height casting shows. Jersey Boys. The Sound of Music. Kids.
The kids are tall these days, what though. That's got to be trickier and trickier.
Kids are tall these days. Back in my day.
The most recently, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, for people that wanted to be an ensemble, had to be below a certain height.
True, because adults playing children.
Yeah, they've got the adults playing the children. Oh. Yeah.
Except for Charlie. Very strange. So we'll get into confused. That later. Any more top 5 lists for Jersey Boys?
Jersey Boys.
I mean, I could come up with a few more.
Singing music,
this
but it's
is
not
the theme song for Jersey Boys, guys. You heard it here first. What?
You know me. I like a theme song for every segment.
I would put it into a list of shows that contain the most songs in a show.
It might be up there.
It might be up there.
Act 1 has 22 different songs, I think.
Jeez,
not
Louise.
Sung through. Let's be specific.
not sung entirely through, but we do at least 16 bars of 22 songs.
Yeah. That's still a lot.
Although if you want to get technical, C'est Soir is a repeat of Oh What a Night. So
no, not that technical. It's in a different language. It counts.
It counts. Any more top 5s, guys?
No. Top 5 unexpected rap openings.
Yes.
Okay, name the other four.
The rest of that list.
Hamilton?
Is that not unexpected?
Okay.
I could put in the list of top five shows I didn't think would have a rap number in them.
That's true. Uh-huh. Or top five surprise opening numbers.
Yes.
Other than
time travel musicals. Okay, we need to stop. Sorry. It's gone off the rails.
We are going to end there and we're going to come back with the lessons that we learned. Jersey Boys, what did it teach us, guys? Oh my goodness, we've lost Julie.
Well, I learned Julie's all gone. About the story of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, which I believe is the tagline of the show.
Is it the story of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Actually, it is. Yeah, it is.
Look at that. Yeah. Who would have thought?
I looked at the website. What have you guys been doing?
I don't know. Any other lessons? Good lesson, like Julie.
We struggle with lessons with jukebox shows and biopics because they don't teach morals. Like,
I think this one does, though, in terms of like maybe don't screw over your bandmates.
You know what? Get an accountant.
Get an accountant. They had an accountant.
Well, actually, yeah, there's an opening scene in Act 2. I played the accountant assistant in where Tommy kind of comes in and goes, oh, I need you to write a check for $10,000 to a construction company, which is obviously his front to withdraw funds out of the band's tax account to use for his gambling addiction. And Nick Massey's in the room as well, and he goes, oh, you know, should we really be drawing down from this account? And the accountant's like, let's not do this. We've got to put something aside for tax. And he's like, just do what I tell you to do. I don't care if you're the accountant. It's my money. So
he had an accountant. So listen to your accountant is the lesson.
Exactly. Yeah.
Listen to your accountant.
Don't forget to put aside money for the tax man.
Yeah.
Just if leave you're
it
creative.
There. Don't gamble it.
Well, yeah. And the crazy thing and the reason why they didn't kick Tommy out long before they found out about his gambling debt was because he was the one that was in charge of dealing with the managers and the producers and kind of had the money side of things. So when they would play a show at a fair or a carnival, he would go to the payer and request everything in cash, and he would bring a bag, he'd put the bag down in front of the guy, and he'd place a gun, empty or loaded, you wouldn't know. He'd put a gun down there and watch the guy count the money and put it in the bag. Then he'd take it, take the gun, leave. And the band obviously found out years later that when Tommy then went to pay everybody else, he would lie about how much they'd been getting paid for each gig, would skim however much off the top he wanted to use as gambling, and then split the rest out, being like, oh, okay, we only got paid $50,000 for this gig, whereas they got paid $80,000. He'd pocket the extra $30,000 and walk away. So if there's a lesson to learn about that, about, I don't know, creatives or producers or anyone that's kind of in a band that's dealing with, you know, friends or family or, you know, someone you're working with money, is to, you know, make sure you're not just
get a receipt,
not blindly trusting people with money, because they could well be, you know, taking a little bit off the top.
Two people should be watching the finances at least.
Just use the electronic transfer.
Which, yes, it's probably.
It's a bit different now.
Probably a little harder to, yeah, I guess, skim thousands of dollars off your bandmates. But
it still happens. There are some theatres that it's happened to, but we'll move on.
Cut that.
There is a lesson, I think, in that, in Bob Gaudio's persistence, I think, that if you believe that you have a product that's good or you are good, just keep on keeping on, because somebody will eventually join you in that and will believe it too. And you might have the next big hit that lasts decades. We don't know.
I mean, if you look at the song breakdown, being like, oh, you know, what their name was at that time, like they went through 20-something different names, and there's a joke in there that Nick Massey kind of goes, oh, who are we going to be today? Because they've changed their name that many times to kind of figure out who they were or what they were. And there's even the story of how they came up with the Four Seasons. We used the bowling alley sign, but other people have gone, oh, you know, it was from the hotel. Or, you know, obviously Vivaldi's a joke in there as well, that he used the name as well. So, yeah, there is that kind of persistence thing, being like, you know what?
Vivaldi really loved bowling.
And even with I Can't Take my eyes off of you, nobody wanted to play that on the radio.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, this song is the song.
This is going to be a hit.
Yeah.
And everybody went, oh, but this is such a weird song. we're never going to play it. And then it goes on to sell 3 million records.
Guys, maybe even if you're a little bit weird, well, it will happen. Good things can come.
What about the ape song, though? Doesn't that disprove that lesson?
That not all comedy lands? Yes.
Just because you believe it's a hit, you don't. Sometimes persistence isn't key.
But he's Miranda, still persisting, though. Sometimes maybe one day.
We're talking about it right now.
Yeah.
Yep.
People know it.
Yep. Okay. So. Well, you know, get Ariana Grande to release that one.
Come on, Grandma.
Yeah. Well, didn't she release one of the other songs?
Yeah, but that's not her name.
Oh, whatever. Ariana.
That's right. What's the last one?
Grande.
Yay.
Pronounce the E.
Grande. Any other lessons, guys?
Miranda doesn't know how to pronounce Ariana
We've
Grande.
Just learned how to pronounce Ariana Grande's name. Oh, dear. Thank you, Jersey Boys. anything out?
We must be done.
We must be done.
Lessons learned. What is it? I think someone before mentioned friendship or something somewhere around the table.
Friendship.
I don't know. Yeah.
Loyalty.
Probably Zane.
Yeah.
He's
there's
the smart
a,
one of the group.
Like there's a real... I guess kind of before it all breaks down, one of the things our directors kind of said to us, they were like, if it feels like these four guys aren't a band who are working together as a cohesive unit, then the show doesn't work because it is a show about four guys that are together and working together to create this sound and this music. Without the four different harmonies in the songs, Sherry wouldn't sound the same. Mm. You know, you can't have Frankie Valli's falsetto without Nick Massey's bass in there. And even at the end when he branches off into Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons, he's still got four guys that back him doing all the vocals, doing all the guitars and things like that. So it is kind of a story of, yeah, four guys that come together and create almost a family in a way, you know, that if you have a dream where you want to get there, you kind of can't do it without having some kind of trust and loyalty with someone.
Yeah.
And in saying that, one of the crazy things in the show is the relationship between Frankie and Bob Gaudio, where they have a handshake where they go, okay, we've got something good going here. Let's band together. And instead of just taking each of our separate royalties or money or whatever from the show, we're going to pool everything together into one bank account, split it 50-50 evenly. And for the rest of our career, we'll work as a team rather than just two guys that work together. And they didn't write any of this down on paper, didn't have a lawyer go over it, anything like that. They literally, after a gig, just sat down, shook each other's hand, and went, okay, we're in this for the long run. And for over 40 years, have continued to put all of their earnings into one account, split it between the two of them 50-50. And that's how they've worked it for their entire career, have just on a handshake gone, you know what, we're good together. Let's keep doing this. So there's something in there about finding someone that you really work with musically or, you know, creatively and going, okay, I see something here. Let's work together, have an open conversation and yeah.
Sticking to your word.
Trust and loyalty.
Yeah, trust and loyalty.
I think that's a nice place to end on, guys. Aww. Trust and loyalty. Let's just take a little break. Josh, are you in anything at the moment? Like, is there anything that you want to plug?
Apart from Jersey Boys, yeah, we're at QPAC until February
17th.
Was it February 19th? I think it's 17th.
Let's go again.
You just do what I do when you're in a show. You just rock up when you're told to rock up.
Yeah, that's it. I
you
got
don't
an email
need to
every
know
night.
The end dates.
So Jersey Boys at QPAC till February 17th.
Yes.
If people want to like follow you, where can they find you?
I'm on everything. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Josh Mulheron is all my handlers, keeping it nice and simple.
Look at you.
How do you spell that?
Josh.
So Josh, J-O-S-H. Mulheron is M-U-L-H-E-R-A-N.
Just amazing. Like it sounds.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's it. I wasn't expecting that. Expecting that just as much as I was expecting the rap opening to Jersey Boys.
It's very unexpected, yeah. But it kind of rolls off the tongue after a while.
Oh, yeah.
But no, apart from doing musical theatre and Jersey Boys at the moment, obviously, I'm also currently in a band called Gunning for Alley.
Cool.
So we're a pop rock kind of vibe for all those... I use the term loosely, but kind of nostalgic emo kids from maybe 2005 where I grew up listening to music like Panic at the Disco, yes. Jack's Mannequin, all those kind of all-time low, anything that you could think of when you were a 17-year-old in your room, you know, with long dark hair and a fringe in front of your face, which
it's amazing. I listen to a lot of Simple Plan. It's fun.
That's it. So
where can we find all the band stuff?
So the band is on Spotify. We're also on Instagram, Twitter, all of those things. Our music's on iTunes. Last year we released our debut EP, Everyday War, which is a 5-track EP that's got one of our songs, Braille, which was a song that kind of started the whole thing off that I wrote about a friend of mine that got sick. And this song was kind of, in a way, saying, you know, every day is a little bit difficult, but if you can fight against those things, you know, there will be that better day when you can come through whatever challenge or difficult thing you're trying to overcome. And that'll, you know, that kind of song springboarded, I guess, this little side project of mine that I wanted to kind of put together some songs and music of what I was doing into a band. And yeah, we released a 5-track EP, put it out. Braille got played on Triple J, pretty cool. Love some Australian music on that. And yeah, and then hopefully this year we're looking forward to recording some more music, maybe putting out another EP.
Maybe a cover of I Go Ape.
Maybe, yeah that could possibly be it. If it's good enough for Ariana, it's good enough for Gunning for Alley.
There you go, guys. You heard it here first. Listen out for that EP when it gets released. I think it will be called I Go Ape, right? That'll be the title of the next EP.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, we'll go with something.
Title track.
Yeah.
Workshop.
Working title. Now, you guys are probably long-term listeners and have heard this spiel before, but for those of you who haven't, there are lots of ways you can connect with Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know.
How can I connect?
Well, we have a Facebook page.
Do we?
We do. We have a Twitter account.
Oh, my God.
We have Instagram. And the handles on that all change for each social media outlet.
Get your device out.
We're really good at this.
Are you ready? Facebook is at Musicals.
At Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know. It's the whole thing.
There we go. And then Twitter is at
Teach
Musicals Teach Me. Musicals Teach Me. Miranda can never find us on Twitter, and now she knows why.
I don't do the Twitter.
You don't do the Twitter.
I don't tweet.
Okay, we'll get you into it one day, I'm sure.
Sorry.
Instagram is the same. Musicals Teach Me. And also we are on iTunes, Spotify, your favorite podcasting station, essentially. Yeah. You will find us. But the real kicker, I think, is Patreon. And if you become one of our patrons on Patreon, there's a myriad of different
extra episodes, like, top fives, the original two episodes that we recorded before we were famous.
They're long ones.
They are very long.
They're
unedited. It's like getting extra for free, except you're paying for it.
It's less than a cup of coffee. It's really, really not that expensive. A US dollar a month, right, Zane? Yeah.
Yes.
That's it. A US dollar a month is going to get you all of that. And bonus rewards is if we get to a certain number of subscribers or patrons.
Extra things start happening.
Zane's going to sing and dance for you. We might dress up as cats. Look, there are lots of things, and it will only happen with your help. Yeah. You want to see it.
Please.
You want to see, what's it called? The Necronomicon.
I can't say Ariana Grande, but I can say Necronomicon.
And that is what Zane will perform to you if we get to 500 patrons.
I think it's 1,000. But anyway.
I really tried hard then to decrease the number, Miranda.
Sorry.
But yes, if you would like to become a patron, it is patreon.com/musicals taught me everything I know. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Jersey Boys.
It was lovely to meet you, Josh.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
Feel free to come back anytime.
Sure. I'll hopefully, you know, be in more musicals and we'll come back and discuss those ones too.
Ooh. Maybe. Get ready, guys. It's been me, KB.
Miranda Selwood.
Julie Eisentrager.
And our special guest,
Josh Mulheron.
Thank you so much for listening. Zane has his head in his hands. We're going to end it there. See you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.